Hello and welcome to Ultimate Medical's Positioning 365 Beyond Seating. My name is Marianne Girardi. I'm a physical therapist, resident certified assistive technology professional, and the clinical education specialist here at Ultimate Medical. Today we'll be talking about standards and gait trainers and how both of these can facilitate gross motor development in children. My co-host today is Doug Levine. Doug is a physical therapist and a member of our clinical advisory board. Doug has been a physical therapist since 1997 and has primarily focused on pediatrics. Since starting Growing Places Therapy in 2006, he and his company have served over 600 children and their families, providing physical, occupational, and speech therapies in the home, school, and daycare setting. He has provided education and trainings with Cure Duchenne in the area of Duchenne's muscular dystrophy for therapists and families here in the United States and internationally since 2016. Welcome, Doug.
Hi, thanks so much, Marianne. Happy to be here.
Our guest today is Jill Blitz. Jill is a physical therapist and a resident certified assistive technology professional. She has been a physical therapist for 22 years, with the last 19 years providing services at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, Division of Pediatric Medicine Outpatient Clinic. Her research has focused on exercise in adolescents with rheumatologic involvement, which has led her to speak at multiple national and community conferences, including the American College of Rheumatology Scientific Meeting and the APTA Combined Sections Meeting, as well as teaching a continuing education course on rheumatology. She has taught a continuing education course entitled Pediatric Equipment 101, The Why, What, When, and How. She has given several talks on equipment, and she runs the equipment clinic at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. She received her Assistive Technology Professional certification in 2013. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me.
When working with children and young adults, many people feel they have to choose between standards and gait trainers. This is mostly due to insurance coverage. The desire for children to work is universal. Parents look forward to and celebrate their child's first step, waiting for it and hoping for it for months. But standards and gait trainers are not mutually exclusive. Both have a place in facilitating a child's development, and they can complement each other, working towards the development of gross motor skills, including independent mobility. Jill, I know mobility is a topic close to your heart. Can you share your thoughts about it?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts about being a physical therapist is helping the child to have some form of mobility. And that includes everything, whether it's when I'm working with babies and getting them to start crawling, going from crawling to standing, working with kids in gait trainers or walkers, or even if it's a wheelchair that's going to give them that mobility. I just find any form of independent mobility is so important to everyone.
I know there's been a lot of studies about how independent mobility can affect the development of cognition, spatial relations. Do you find a difference in the children once they start with independent mobility?
I really do. I see it all the time. And of course, it makes the parents so thrilled. But so often, once a kid realizes that they can move on their own and independently, they're smiling and laughing and getting to interact and seeing people around the room. I always think about this one patient who was a preemie. He was born at 23 weeks. And when I first started seeing him, he couldn't sit up. I started seeing him when he was about three. And he couldn't even sit on his own or stand at all. And I did start him with a stander. And once I noticed he was in the stander and had a little bit of movement in his legs, and then I put him in the gait trainer. And at first, it took a long time. It took a very long time till he started moving in the gait trainer. And for a good while, he walked only sideways and backwards. And then finally it just clicked. And now he basically runs in it. And he runs and he loves me taking him down the hallway, and he runs and he wants to look in every single room, say hi to every single person who walks by. And he's very nosy. He likes to look at doors and open the doors and look inside. And it's the biggest smile on his face every time I get him in the gait trainer.
You know, Jill, I just want to go back for a second and and kind of reiterate the point that you made. just about the importance of mobility and movement in whatever form that takes or whatever it looks like. You know, I think we need to, I think it's important to kind of get away from, you know, that every child gets this piece of equipment or every child gets that piece of equipment, because they really serve different purposes. And the whole goal, I think, you know, in working with in pediatrics is to get people moving and get people independently moving, if that's possible, or if not, just getting them upright in different positions. And, you know, and I think different pieces of equipment serve that purpose. And so I think just kind of focusing on the mobility part being the key, that kind of helps sometimes guide the decision in what types of equipment we're going to use.
Yeah, it's true. And I read this article recently called On Time Mobility, Advocating for Mobility Equality. And it was, I just felt like this article was written for everything I believe in, you know, and they talk about mobility as a human right. And it's so true. And a lot of this things this article talks about, we as physical therapists, it's our job to fight for this, whether it's through advocacy, whether it's, you know, advocating through the insurances, whether it's advocating for better technology to give people mobility, children mobility, you know, whether it's just part of our job. And instead of looking at it as, and I like that they call it on time mobility, because I feel like my whole life as a physical therapist, we sort of would use this word early mobility, but we have to sort of change the attitude. And it's not early, we're just doing it on time. A child starts crawling, you know, however they start crawling, 6, 7, 8 months, you know, they start crawling, giving children mobility at the time that they would have had mobility if they were developing on the usual trajectory, helping them develop mobility as their peers would.
I think with mobility or independent mobility being like the ultimate goal, but especially for walking, you need to have strong bones, good range of motion. You need to have muscle tone that enables you to move.
Right.
You have to have balance in the upright posture. You have to learn what proprioceptive input you're getting, because it's not an innate. We have to learn our proprioception. And you have to learn about gravity.
Right.
And I think, as you say, on time, typically developing children on time learn to experiment in the upright posture and gain all this stuff to help them towards independent mobility. I think that, again, another responsibility of us as a therapist is to provide the children we work with the experiences they're typically developing peers and have, which is part of the whole route of planning of development and moving on to independent mobility. And I think for those who can't do it on their own, I think standing frames are able to help bridge that gap or to provide them with the positioning. What do you all think?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And anytime I've given a talk or a lecture about equipment and talking about why standards are important and why gait trainers are important, I always, you know, say, well, before you do anything, you got to stand. Before you can, you know, walk, you need to stand. And I kind of put this big sign up. So first we must stand, you know, we got to start with standing. And I really start talking about how the standing is so important. You know, a lot of the things you said, it starts that muscle input into the legs, learning how to engage the muscles in the standing position. Other things unrelated to walking, it helps with digestion. I can't tell you how many times when I've started standing with kids and the parents are like, oh yeah, we no longer need to use the, you know, for her constipation, we no longer need to use the medicine anymore because we put them in the stander and it helps so much. And like you said too, even the proprioception of standing, if you're laying in sitting or laying down all the time, you can't go from that to walking. You got to first start with standing. Even the babies who are developmentally on the right track, you have to first stand. We got to get that standing balance before they start taking steps.
And I think it's also incumbent on us as therapists to treat holistically and not just, you know, how is this going to impact their physical function, but standing, movement, gait trainers, you know, all of these things really have an impact on, like Jill, the other systems you were talking about, circulation, digestion, you know, pulmonary function, all of that, but also the psychosocial part of it. I mean, we need to be addressing those types of things as well. You know, how can they relate to their peers now that maybe if they're using a stander, now they see the world in a different way and get different input visually from a vertical position instead of a constant sitting position or laying down. So I really think the use of these pieces of equipment helps us to treat more holistically as well.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree.
So when you're evaluating for pieces of equipment, what are you looking for?
You know, I mean, and especially when deciding between a stander and a gait trainer or which one to start with first, a lot of it has to do with, it might be the child's motivation to move. Do they have this innate initiation, motivation to move? I do, for kids who don't seem like they're quite going to start taking steps, I'll start with the stander. And even after maybe, you know, not anything statistically set, but like maybe I'll start with like 5 sessions in the stander and I watch them and I see how they're tolerating the stander. If I see a little bit of muscle activation in their legs while on the stander, then I'll try the gait trainer and see if they move. And a lot of it has to do with this motivation to move might be my decision making.
And I think too, for me, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about this too, Jill, is you know, what am I looking for if I've chosen a certain piece of equipment? You know, let's say I've chosen a stander. What I'm looking for the most part is flexibility and adjustability. I want to be able to have as much adjustability as possible. Even if it's, you know, even if it's not a school situation where I'm putting many different kids in that, just for that child, they're different on different days. And yeah. So, you know, if we're trying to foster weight bearing, or we're trying to foster proprioception or vestibular or whatever it is, we need to be able to have that flexibility to change that piece of equipment around on different days, depending upon what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're going to talk just, you know, specifically about standards for a moment, because I find that standards have a lot of different purposes. For example, the standards that give you the, where you can put the legs in abduction for better hip alignment or to help with the hip alignment. If a patient really needs, we got to focus on these hips, I would choose a stander that had the ability to go into abduction. And, or on that same, talking about your flexibility within the stander itself, there are standards that can be a prone stander or a supine stander, which is really nice because it works on different things. It can work, you know, if you put them in prone, they can work on their neck extensors and they can work on that area. Or if they just don't have enough head strength or neck strength, you would put them in the supine position. So I really love the standards that have a lot of options and easy to adjust, you know, so that makes it easy for the parents to adjust.
When you're evaluating, and I know you said it comes with the independent mobility and how they're motivated to move. Are there any times when you would try to get both for a child?
You know, and that's, you know, that's a really hard situation because, you know, and I, you know, because I, here in California, it's near impossible. I mean, you really can't. I shouldn't say you're not 100% impossible. I've had a couple in my 20 something years of being a PT, maybe 2 families have been able to get both. So it's sort of an unfortunate situation. It's really, really hard to get both, but I do understand the purpose of needing both, because in a stander, you have a more focused weight bearing on the legs, and it's, you can get the position perfect and you can work on flexibility and stretching while they're in the stander. Whereas in the gait trainer, it might not be quite as focused on the weight bearing itself, because sometimes the kids are in there and they're just moving their legs and maybe they're not getting that real focused weight bearing on the bones, but they get to move. When it comes down to that, if I really have to decide if the kid is moving, I go for the gait trainer, because I'm like, any kind of mobility, that's what I want. If in my perfect dream world, if everyone could get both, I would get, you know, if I could do both and it made sense to get both and the parents could handle having both in the house, that would be sort of, you know, dream world ideal situation.
Yeah, I think it, you know, I think sometimes it comes down to creativity. You know, we have to deal with the reality of insurance for most families and what they're most likely going to cover, what they're not going to cover. And we also, I think, need to look at the timeline of things, because we might be willing to fight the battle of trying to get both, but that may take 6 months or 9 months or a year and a half, and then we might have lost that window. So sometimes we do have to choose one or the other. And then also trying to get creative in, you know, this is, Jill, I don't know if you have this available where you are, but I know here in Austin where I am, we have like a loan closet. So sometimes we can try to do that as well if, you know, if we're pretty sure that it's just going to be a protracted battle. Maybe we try to get one through insurance and see about getting another, like maybe we can borrow it from the loan closet.
Yeah, and especially just in Los Angeles where I live, we don't have a lot of things set up like that. I'm hearing a little more and more about it, but it's not super readily available. The SMA community seems to have a very good system set up and people are able to sort of have these loaner pieces of equipment, which is really nice. But it's not widely available.
Yeah, I've heard about them pretty much throughout the country, and it depends. I know here in Massachusetts, we've got a few. And we also have like United Cerebral Palsy and MDA, both have closets where they'll loan stuff. And when I was treating her, what I would do usually is start out with the stander and wait 6 months, and then go for the gait trainer because they had made improvement.
Right, right.
Has that ever worked for you guys?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe not 6 months, but maybe a year after. I had one unfortunate situation where it was the opposite. We got them the gait trainer, and then she had a decline, and she really needed the stander for many, many reasons. And it took us, it's kind of complicated, sir, but it took us probably 2 years of begging and pleading with her insurance to get the stander, which was so unfortunate because she needed it so badly. And that was an unfortunate situation, but she did finally get it after 2 years of fighting, like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth with her insurance. They wanted more trials. We'd bring her in for more trials. We'd do everything the insurance said. We want 12 more trials. Okay, we'll do 12 more trials if you'll get her this stander, you know. So it was hard. It was really, really hard to get it. But she had like a state-funded insurance. It was Medi-Cal. Here in California, we have Medi-Cal, and they're tough.
I was reading an article not too long ago that was, it was actually an old article. It's about 10 years old. It was done in Long Island University, where they used a standing program with children who were already ambulating with gait trainers and posterior walkers and whatever. And they found that by using the standers daily, they found that the kids were able to increase their stride length, increase their gait speed, decrease their double support time. Have you ever seen that? You've been able to use them both together?
You know, and that makes a lot of sense that that would help. And there are patients where they might have a gait trainer at home. And so then when they come to PT, we'll use the stander in PT, in their PT session. And it does help because for all the things we said, it gets them in that very focused weight bearing. It gets their muscles, their, you know, their alignment in a good position. So it makes a lot of sense that that makes a difference.
And I think it comes back to kind of what are the benefits of a stander, what are benefits of a gait trainer? I mean, there are certainly pros and cons, many pros and cons to both those things. But, you know, for a lot of the kids that have spasticity or dystonia or things like that, the gait trainer can be a fantastic way for them to be up and explore. But we do, you know, we have more degrees of freedom with that, even with, you know, lots of, you know, we can kind of brace this or put a strap here or whatever. With the gait trainer, it is more difficult to get that that focused weight bearing or that focused stride length. So I agree. I could see the benefits, like in a therapeutic situation, of using both, because the gait trainer gets them up, gets them moving, gets them exploring. But you could have that difficulty with that abnormal tone.
Yeah, I agree.
I was also talking to a parent who, if you ever see one of the presentations, Briella's in it. So she had had a dorsal rhizotomy at age 3 with good reduction of tone in the lower extremity, because I think sometimes we all fall into the, it's because of the spasticity. It's like, we all know that it's not just the spasticity, it's a combination. And so she had the dorsal rhizotomy. Her physiatrist noticed that her migration percentage increased, and it actually was up over 30 degrees on both hips. Went to the orthopedist. They wanted to do surgery. Mom held off. She didn't want to do it. And in 6 months, her migration percentage increased to over 40 on one side. And Mom went to Instagram because she didn't want to do surgery. And a therapist somewhere in Instagram suggested a standing program. And they started a standing program, and she's been doing the standing program for about 3 years. Her migration percentages are back down within under 33%, which is functioning. But even when she first started the standing program, like we talked before, she had better posture, better sitting balance, and her gait in the posterior walker improved. And I asked Mom, I said, has she ever used a stander? And Mom said, no, when she was little, the focus was on walking. So all we did was work on walking, but she wasn't weight bearing enough.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that? Because she wasn't walking. She was one of those children who wasn't really motivated to walk.
So they decide. So she wasn't motivated to walk, and then you switched to a stander, or she hadn't switched to a stander.
She didn't switch to the stander until her hips became subluxed.
Oh, I see. So I mean, I just think that story is a perfect example of, and one of the importance of standers. This, you know, for hip alignment, for improving hip alignment. So I think it's a great example of how standards are so important. And I don't know, this just reminded me of back when I first became a PT, which wasn't technically that long ago, but it used to be absolutely impossible to get a stander through insurance companies. It used to be that people would just say, well, I'm not even going to try because we can't even get it. Insurance companies won't authorize a stander. And it's amazing. So I have to say that's something that's gotten much better, because back in the day when I first became a PT, it was so hard to get the insurance company to cover it. And I think maybe because of stories like that or research that's been done, it's gotten actually better. I mean, I can actually get a stander. You know, if I ask for it, I can usually get it from the insurance company, even if it takes a year or so to get them to approve it. But we can get standers now.
Yeah, there was a time when, well, I think you hit it on the head, is it's not so much the stories as the fact that we actually now have research that shows it makes a difference, that it shows it can affect bone mineral density, that it can affect range of motion. When I was first a PT, the only place you saw standards were in schools.
Right. Same. I mean, even same with me just 20 something years ago, you know, it was like that. And, you know, when I think about it, there's besides, you know, the kids that we work with, the research, you know, or everything you see, so many articles you see that we all need to stand. Everyday people need to stand all the time. They have standing desks. Your watch reminds you to stand. Your phone reminds you to stand, because even for people who have no disabilities or no health issues, need to stand all the time. So why are we making our patients sit in their wheelchair all day, or, you know, or lay down all day? So standing is important for everybody. So this is also why it's so important for us to get our children, our patients standing.
Jill, do you think, just a question for you, do you think in that amount of time, I mean, I've it sounds like I've been a PT for about as long as you have.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is a different expectation in a positive way from the parents, from the community? You know, I think therapists have been talking a long time about how it's important for people with varying disabilities to be contributing members of society and to not be, you know, just kind of stuck in the house, but they need to be out in the community. Do you think that maybe the increased use of standing comes from maybe just kind of a different thought process that, you know, that we need, that we should be expecting more from people with disabilities in terms of getting up, getting out, you know, going to school, going to work, and you know, standing maybe is part of that, as opposed to just laying in bed or just being in a chair.
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectations of the parents is different. Maybe it's that there's more information out there. Social media changes a lot of things. Parents have more access to information of what there is. Therapists are more informed about it. I still come across that once in a while parents who don't know, and I, you know, and then I'll introduce them to some sort of equipment, and the parents are just amazed and thrilled because they've never heard of it. And so I feel like I see sort of both, some parents who really are like, yes, they have these expectations, but some parents who still don't know. And when I introduce it to them, they're just so thrilled that there's this possibility for their child to do more.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think part of that is also not only the fact that we're saying, and the society is accepting people and the community, there's also a variety of equipment available. And I know I'm dating myself, but when I first became a PT, there were no custom wheelchairs. There was no seating systems. Everything that had to be done had to be built. And I think now you see wheelchairs in Target ads and on TV and in movies and stuff. So it seems to be a total shift of the way the society thinks and accepts people and the availability of the equipment.
Yeah, that's why I think that's why I love that part of my job. I love doing the equipment clinic. I just love it because I love the change I can help people with, the change I can make in their lives, that the fact that I can help make this family's life easier. It's again, another favorite part. I have a lot of favorite parts of my job, I guess, but that is like part of what I just love about being a physical therapist.
I'm sure getting to see somebody walk across the room for the first time is exciting for both you and the parents.
It really is. It really is. Or any movement, even when a baby crawls for the first time, because I also work with a lot of babies, even when a kid pushes their wheelchair for the first time is so exciting.
It is. I agree. I mean, it's the whole movement component, not just, you know, necessarily the walking, but like you said, any type of movement is thrilling.
and also being able to participate on eye level with their peers. And if people are working, here I go dating myself again, at the blackboard, they're whiteboards now, right? They can stand if they have either a gait trainer or a standard. They're able to have the external support they need to keep up with their peers and to participate fully.
And because I work, see them in the clinic, I don't work in the school, it's more I get to see the eye to eye or closer to eye to eye level with the parents or with the siblings. And or because I love once I get them in the stander, I like pushing the stander around so they can see the hallway and saying hi to everyone in the hallway. And it's and, you know, being at that different position instead of this low seat, you know, whether they're in a stroller or a wheelchair, they get to be up and kind of see everything around them.
And I've seen that as, I mean, I've been a school therapist for 24 years, and I've seen that change. I mean, it's incredible. Sometimes when we get these kids up in a stander for the first time, it's like they're looking at the world from a whole different viewpoint. And in a sense, they kind of are. But it's just amazing to see how curious they get, you know, being up at eye level with their peers or just seeing the room that they're in from a different perspective. It's just an incredible thing a lot of times to see their eyes light up.
You know, and to go back to the little boy that I brought up at the beginning, the boy who was born, you know, at 23 weeks, once he started walking in the gait trainer, he started playing with toys. Before that, he would, you know, not be interested in it or kind of throw it or push it away. And once he started walking a lot, we started playing and he'll play with the car tracker or he'll play basketball and put the ball in the hoop or beanbags in the hoop. And he's so excited and so proud of himself. And before that, he never had an interest in toys. And I realized it's a little bit, he got a little older also, but it really started when he started walking. And that was pretty exciting for both his mom and I to see how into playing he is now.
It's cool. It's always exciting when you see them come into their own.
Yeah, it really is.
So I know in the research I've read, they've stated that you can start standing in a stander or a gait trainer, but I think it's too early for a gait trainer. But they say we can start standing as soon as 9 months corrected age in order to provide the same on-time stimulation that we're giving the typically developing child. How young do you usually start?
Well, I wouldn't say I have started in, because we don't have, you know, I have to go with what I actually have in the clinic. So I don't think I've actually put a kid that young in a stander because we just don't have a stander small enough. Definitely though, I would put a kid 9 months old in standing, but me holding them with support. As far as a stander, I would say it's more related to like once they're long enough, tall enough to fit into the standards that I have available to me. I know standards exist that can fit for a 9 month old, but we just don't have that in my clinic right now.
Yeah, and I know, Maryam, my wife is a early childhood therapist, a physical therapist, and she routinely puts, you know, little kids, 9, 10, 12 months old, in a stander to start that weight bearing. I mean, if they're, you know, if their bodies are ready and there's not any, you know, major asymmetries or things like that, she'll put the kids in a stander and begin that upright positioning.
I was talking to a therapist from, I think it was South Dakota, and she was saying that she's starting to use it for the very low tone kids, mostly her Down syndrome children. And actually the Academy of Cerebral Palsy and Developmental Medicine suggests that you start standing in positioning equipment with on their care pathway for hypotonia at 9-10 months. But this therapist I talked to in from South Dakota was saying that she started using it with her young Down syndrome kids, and she's finding that they're able to initiate gait earlier than before. And it was funny, she was at a conference. And during the conference, she got a text from one of the parents that she had just started it with a few weeks earlier, saying that her daughter, for the first time, she took her out of the stander and she actually was able to bear weight on her legs for the first time. And she'd only been using the stander like 3 weeks. Have you tried it with low tone kids?
I have tried it with low tone kids, but this is giving me the thought that maybe with my kids with Down syndrome, I've got to try the stander sooner. So that's exciting to hear. Definitely put many low tone kids in standers though.
Yeah, they need that extra support to stay up against gravity. With the ones that you've been tried it with, have you noticed an increase in their ability to activate their anti-gravity muscles?
With kids with low tone?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I've noticed that. And I sort of said this earlier too. Often I'll start with the stander, and then once they can handle that, you know, that weight bearing, switch to a, you know, try it in a gait trainer. Sometimes we'll do both in the same session, have them in the stander first, kind of get that almost like a warm up, and then try them in the gait trainer, see if that helps to initiate any steps or weight bearing while they're in the gait trainer, supported, a different type of supported standing.
Yeah, I'm sure the spasticity modulation effects of standing would play into using the gait trainer.
Yeah, right. Sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen with a low tone kids, especially I've seen with using a stander, I've seen a fairly big improvement a lot of times in the trunk. Because I think it's so, you know, for those kids that are really pretty low tone, it's just so hard to coordinate all, you know, to coordinate the facilitation of their trunk and the activation of their trunk when they're also trying to, you know, work on standing or tall kneeling. So a lot of times when you use the stander and you can kind of get that weight bearing through the legs a little bit more passively, it allows them to facilitate the use of their trunk and activation without having to coordinate so many different parts of their body.
Right, and not worry, and then they don't have to worry about balance at the same time. So the stander will give them the balance while they can work on the strengthening.
Exactly, and so you sometimes get that proximal stability first, even though you're using the stander, you know, and for the distal parts for their legs, but you kind of take that out of the equation a little bit and you get more proximal stability, which then a lot of times can lead to that distal stability and mobility. You know, I think that there's definitely a place for both standers and gait trainers. It's not one or the other, or we always do this or we always do this. I think that there are pros and cons to both, and that a lot of times the use of a stander first, Jill, you were talking about this kind of towards the beginning, that the use of the stander first gets them upright, gets them stable, and then to a point where maybe we can move on to a gait trainer so that they get that independent mobility.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. And for the situations where the kid might need both, there's sometimes situations like that, but meaning both at the same time. And I see the benefits of both of them. And we talked earlier, what did you say, you know, holistically, like kind of like looking at the whole thing and trying different equipment to give our kids what they need, whether it's more weight bearing in their legs, and everything the standard could give with the stretching and the all the other things that helps with their systems, or giving them that independent mobility.
Jill, have you ever tried any mobile standers or Doug?
Yes, but not often. I love the concept of the mobile standers. I just haven't recently really come across a patient that was appropriate for it. But I love mobile standers. I think part of it is some of the patients I work with, the mobile stander doesn't give them enough support. to give them what I need. You know, yeah. The
yeah,
ones we
no,
have,
I hear you. Just
yeah. They're a little hard to get the patient into some of the mobile prone standers. So I think maybe that's why I don't always use them.
Yeah, I've used it. I wouldn't say really frequently, but I've used it a decent amount in the schools. I can think of, I'm thinking about her now and just, you know, seeing her face smile is making me smile. A little girl that had an issue with her cerebellum. She had an underdeveloped cerebellum. So she really couldn't walk. She's about 6 or 7 years old. And we had her in a stander and she liked that, but she really likes movement. And we put her in a mobile prone stander and she just lit up. I mean, she was thrilled and she was definitely, a bit on the dystonic side, but more on the low tone side. So to your point, Jill, it you know, was a little bit difficult getting her into it, but once we got her into it, she loved being upright. She was just smiling. She was exploring. So I think for some kids, there is really a place for the mobile prone stander.
I think it works really well for kids who have either a spinal cord injury or spina bifida and their upper extremities are strong and they can move their wheelchair, but it's a chance to be standing and moving. So the kid, the one kid that I did get a mobile stander for, he had a spinal cord injury and he loved it because then he could play basketball with his brother and he was good in it, you know, and he would spin around and go and he was really fast. And I remember the mom saying, yeah, but now he kind of runs away from me. And I said, well, most 4-year-olds do that. So
oh,
that's
well.
Okay. You know,
that's right. That's a good thing. That's
you
a
know,
good thing.
That's kind of good. Cause like, that's what most 4-year-olds do. And you know, and he was very happy in that mobile prone stander.
That's cool. To have the ability to be independently mobile and be upright. We've got all kinds of equipment now to help us achieve individual goals.
Yeah, it's nice to, you know, you were saying when you kind of first started out, there weren't even customized wheelchairs. It is nice that there are so many different options. I mean, that really makes a big difference in trying to achieve the patient's goals.
Well, I want to thank both Doug and Jill for joining me today to talk about gait trainers and standers, that they're not mutually exclusive. Both of them have a part in a child's life or in a young adult's life. They both have a lot of the same purposes and provide a lot of the same stimulation to the child. They also can provide some significant difference, especially if you're worried about hips. As Jill said, you need to have something with abduction and you need some mobility and how important independent mobility is to anyone in this world. And that standing can be part of the journey to independent mobility, and it can also be part of improving the independent mobility. So before we go, Doug and Jill, do you have anything you want to add?
No, thank you for having me. I anytime we can talk about equipment, giving kids mobility, I'm happy to talk about it because it's one of my passions.
Agreed. I think this is a great discussion today. And, you know, it's important to keep having these discussions. Why are we utilizing different pieces of equipment? What are the benefits? What are the obstacles to it? So I think this was great.
Well, again, thank you both for joining me. And thank you all for listening to this edition of Positioning 365 Beyond Seating. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. If you would like additional information on our products, please visit our website, www.ultimatemedical.com. On the website, you will also find on-demand free webinars and a schedule of upcoming in-person courses or live webinars. For any additional information about this podcast or any educational opportunities Ultimate Medical may have, please email me at marianne.girardi@ultimatemedical.com. Thank you all for joining us today. We hope to see you again soon.